Hello and welcome to the debate. I'm Marcia Hashemi. After 1,000 years of Bedouins living in the Negev Desert, Israel is threatening to expel 70,000 Bedouins. Now, if this plan by Israel is carried out, Tel Aviv will demolish 40 Palestinian villages, confiscate the Bedouins' land, and rebuild settlements. How is it that Tel Aviv can displace a people, destroy and confiscate their land, and still think that it has every right to do so?
Negev Desert, also known as Negev, home to its oldest inhabitants since the 7th century, the Palestinian Bedouin community. Some 200,000 Palestinian Bedouins live in the 13,000-kilometer rocky desert, but their villages take up only 2.5% of the desert. Israel has approved the mass expulsion of the Bedouin under a program called the PROA plan to introduce huge economic development. The Israeli parliament has also approved the plan. It allows for the mass forced removal of up to 70,000 or 30% of the entire Palestinian Bedouins from their ancestral land. Under the plan, up to 40 Bedouin villages will be demolished. Instead of the Bedouin homes, Israel will build new settler units. The eviction is now drawing fire. Rights organizations say it would be the largest single act of forced displacement of Palestinians by Israel since its inception in 1948. Critics call it ethnic cleansing of the land's oldest population.
Citizenship counts for nothing in Israel if you happen to be an Arab. Tens of thousands of Palestinian Bedouins are being forcibly displaced from their homes and lands. At the same time, there are Israeli advertisements on the web that promise you funding as a British immigrant to come and live in vibrant communities in the Negev if you're Jewish. This is ethnic cleansing.
Israel says the villages are in a militarized zone and within the firing range, and that the Bedouins must go. Tel Aviv has refused to give them basic services such as running water, electricity, landline telephone, health clinics, and schools. Tel Aviv says it will move the evicted Bedouins to 7 designated towns, but critics say they are overcrowded, crime-ridden, and impoverished. Rights groups say what's expected to take place as a Bedouin mass expulsion has been happening for years. They say more than 1,000 Palestinian homes were demolished in 2011, and destruction of their houses continued in the following year. Palestinian authorities say such measures taken by Israel risk failure of the US-brokered talks with them. The PROA plan has been criticized by the international community as well. But Israel, having failed to keep a clean sheet on its human rights record, couldn't care less about the fate of Palestinian Bedouins. What's happening in Negev or Negev is part of a bigger picture of Israel's plan to build more settlements in the occupied Palestine, including the West Bank. However, those settlements have been described illegal under the international law.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, co-founder of Free Palestinian Movement, Paul Lourdi out of San Francisco, and senior fellow Hudson Institute, Richard White out of Washington. Welcome both of you to the program. Well, let's start this off in Washington. Well, Mr. White, many people point their finger now at Israel and talk about the similarity between the regime in Tel Aviv and the apartheid regime in South Africa. Others claim that Tel Aviv is even worse than South Africa. What's your perspective on this? Are we seeing results of racism or apartheid-like decisions?
The South African government had an explicit ideology of trying to separate the races and then giving explicit preferences to particularly the whites, but sometimes the minorities. The Israeli government doesn't have that such a policy. Its policy is that it treats all of its citizens equal. So there's a major difference in the laws of the state.
So when we look at the situation, sorry to interrupt you. So when we look at that, we have buses now separating. For example, there are Palestinians that cannot get on some of the public buses. When we're talking about the Negev Desert, we're talking about these people who've been there for a long period of time actually being removed. But then the plan is to replace them with Israeli settlers. And you say that there is no difference. There's no separation.
I said in terms of the legal differences that Israel's laws are more closer to the liberal mainstream than you find in South Africa during the years of apartheid. That was the question you asked.
All right, but perhaps the reality is something different. Are you saying the laws are on the book, but perhaps the reality of what we're seeing is different?
Well, it was well known that President Obama and Secretary Clinton and many others tried to get Israel to change its settlement policy in the interest of furthering a peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. And for various reasons, that effort failed.
All right, Mr. Lerodi, your take on this. Do you see similarities between what is happening in the occupied Palestinian territories right now and South Africa?
I have to say there are, of course, similarities and differences. One of the differences is that South Africa did not seek to expel the non-white South Africans from South Africa, whereas the explicit policy of Israel and its Zionist predecessors and founders was to remove as many of the indigenous population as possible. And this is part of that plan. So this, I would have to say, that's a difference between the two. So sometimes it's been compared to the policy of the United States and North America to eliminate the indigenous population of North America or marginalize it. Or it's also been compared to the Nazi policies in Germany of eliminating or removing undesirable population. So there are similarities and differences between all of these. And as far as the laws of Israel are concerned with regard to this policy, the laws apply to everyone equally, except that they specify certain categories of persons that are eligible for certain things and are not eligible for other things. If you want to go to the website of Adala, you'll find more than 50 laws that explicitly discriminate against non-Jews and Palestinians especially. And if we are to believe what Mr. Weiss says, then apparently the United States is absolutely helpless to prevent these settlements from taking place, because Israel has every right to $3 billion a year of U.S. aid, regardless of what they do with respect to the settlements. And there's no question of cutting back that aid in order to try to get Israel to modify its plans. So it's very perplexing what Mr. Weiss has to say.
Well, Mr. White, let's look at the situation now in the Negev Desert, because we know that Tel Aviv always says that the occupied Palestine was given to a people without land, for a land without people. Is the Negev Desert another example of a land without people, sir?
I mean, clearly there have been residents of the Negev for a long time. I mean, thousands of years. So no, that's not a correct statement.
Okay, so you've just said they've been there thousands of years. So if that is the case, then what gives Tel Aviv the right to take these people who you have said have been there thousands of years, now to expel them from their land, destroy their homes? Why does Tel Aviv think they have that right? It has the right.
I think that the justification of the Israeli government has been for security reasons. There is, from what I understand, There are people in Israel who are concerned that these their activities have been a potential threat to other citizens in Israel.
What do you say to that, Mr. Lorodi, that these Bedouins who've been living there thousands and thousands of years now appear to be a threat to Israel? That basically, I guess, gives them the right to wipe them out, or at least take them out of the Negev Desert.
Well, any non-Jew is a threat to Israel, so they need to be gotten rid of one way or another. To do it without necessarily slaughtering them, that's a very humanitarian gesture on the part of Israel. And the security problems of Bedouins are that sometimes they're in the way. And, they might come in the way of the testing of artillery and things like that that might be in the region. So they have to be removed. This has been the case since the beginning of Israel. All non-Jews are in that situation.
Well, what does it stop, Mr. Weitz? So right now it's the Bedouins that's in the Negev, and we see what's happening in so many different parts. We see Gaza, we see the West Bank, and so many other places. Where does this stop? Where does the line, where do you think Tel Aviv is going to draw that line that they feel that they can basically do whatever they want to do against the native people of that land for what you say are security reasons?
That would depend on who is in power in the Israeli government. The different Israelis have different views on what should be the outcome of that situation, what tactics should be used. Different foreign governments linked to Israel have different views on that as well, and those sometimes can change. So it's hard to say what is the end goal of Israel. It depends on which group in Israel you're talking about, and it might also depend on the environment they find themselves. I mean, as you know, U.S. policy has been to try and establish peace between Israel and the Palestinians, and as part of that peace agreement, the Palestinians would recover some of their occupied territories. Israel settlers would gain some rights in an independent state of Palestine, and so on. But that's just the U.S. preference. Various Israelis differ on what they want and whether that's an acceptable solution.
Okay, Mr. Lorodi, you were shaking your head. You want to comment, sir?
What I can say is that the Israeli interest in negotiations has always been for them to fail, and for the Palestinian participants in the negotiations to be the scapegoat for the reason for the failure. This has to be done periodically, every couple of years, in order to provide justification for the ethnic cleansing project of Israel. They have to be able to say, see, we tried, we went to the negotiations, and the Palestinians wouldn't agree, so what choice do we have? We have to go back to our original project of removing all Palestinians from Palestine, and we'll be caretakers for the land until the Palestinians come to their senses.
Okay, well, Mr. Weitz, looking at this situation now, we see that more and more countries are actually protesting, or at least people from those countries actually today in the UK. We see that many activists and actually various people from the music industry are also participating in protests. Do you think that these protests, as we see them growing across the world, ultimately, are they going to have an effect on changing the policies of the Israeli regime?
Well, again, it would depend. There are clearly many Israelis who are opposed to the settlements, would want to live in peace with their Palestinian neighbors and others. Many of them are very moved by the protests. Many of them participate in the protests. But there are others who disagree with this approach, oppose the protesters, and then want to think that the best way to enhance Israeli security is through expansion and settlements. So
what about international law, sir?
It depends on who the audience is. Some Israelis will be influenced, some will not be.
Okay. And what about international law?
Well, I don't really know that how. I just know that I know.
Got Mr. White, staying with you, I asked you, what about international law in all of this? We talked about protests, and
I thought you meant him.
Yes, staying with you, sir.
Right. My understanding, and I could be wrong, very easily wrong, is that settlements in occupied territories are illegal, and that has been the U.S. position. And then, you know, the question is, how do you get the Israelis to withdraw?
And so what does this mean? Let me stop you right there. So you're saying
Israel has to be assured of its security.
Okay, so you're saying, sir, that according to the U.S.'s position, and of course also to the international community's position, that the settlements are illegal, and you're saying, so what can the U.S. do? What about Mr. Lourdes' point in that the United States could withhold the billions of dollars that it give Israel every year? Why doesn't it do that if they're going against international law, as you've just stated?
You will recall that in 2009, 2010, the Obama administration came in, took a very tough stance on the settlements, threatened to cut back on aid, and took other measures. And the effect was exactly the opposite of what you're hoping to achieve. The Israeli Republic rallied behind Netanyahu. He took a very tough stand. The Americans had to back down, and since then have not pursued that approach. So the thinking is a confrontationalist approach, at least in terms of the current Israeli government, the way current Israeli opinion is, would not work. That the best way to induce moderation in Israel's settlement policy is to reassure them in terms of their security. And that's why continued U.S. aid and efforts by the U.S. to defuse potential threats in the region is thought to be most favorable environment to encourage them to make concessions.
What about that, Mr. Lourdes? Your government, basically, Mr. Weiss is saying that they better continue actually giving the billions and billions to Tel Aviv. Otherwise, they may not like what they will see coming out of Israel. Your take, sir.
In fact, historically speaking, whenever on the rare occasions that the United States has actually withheld funds, and I believe the last time was the Father Bush's administration, on those occasions, it is the Israelis who have backed down and stopped the settlement policy. The problem here is, in fact, that the U.S. backed down. When the U.S. takes a tough stance and holds by that tough stance and follows through on its threats to withdraw funds, then Israel jumps in line right away. It just simply hasn't been tried. And when the effort that Mr. Weiss is referring to in 2009, on that occasion, it was the domestic pressure that forced the Obama administration to change its stance and go back. It wasn't the pressure from Israel itself. The administration simply caved into the policy without much of a fight.
Well, what about that, Mr. White? You have a saying in the U.S., actions speak louder than words. So you're saying that Obama is walking the walk. He's talking the talk. Is he walking the walk? If he didn't put pressure actually on them, and if he would actually, the government itself, of course, not just Obama, withhold those funds, don't you think that, as our guest in San Francisco said, that Israel will actually very quickly fall in line with what the United States is telling them to do?
No, I don't. I think what they would do is they just do what these Egyptians have done when the U.S. is now threatening to cut off their aid in other countries and just said, well, okay, we don't want your aid. We're going to do what we want. We'll find other backers, or if not, we'll carry on by ourselves. That's been the standard reaction of these countries whenever this is tried.
Mr. Lourdes, your take on all this. What will it take to end the racist policies that everyone is witnessing coming out of the occupied Palestinian areas? What will it take to bring Israel in line with international law?
I have to sympathize with Mr. Weiss with regard to the speculation as to what would happen if the United States actually got serious about opposing Israeli expansionist policies and racist policies and so forth, because we don't really have much evidence to go by. It has essentially, for all practical purposes, never happened. The United States is propping up Israel. It always has, and a major part of the economy is backing it up. It has done Israel's bidding on a number of occasions with respect to sending its troops to destroy Israel's enemies, using sometimes false Israeli intelligence and all this sort of thing. Things have to change in the United States. The American people, as they did with Syria, have to say, no more. We don't want any intervention in Israel. We don't want any, the way we don't want any intervention in Syria. We don't want our money going to Israel. It's pouring money down the drain, and it's making matters worse. Let's just pull out and let them on their own, which if what Mr. Weiss is saying is true, Israel will be perfectly happy to operate on its own. And in that case, it's going to fall apart because it doesn't have the economy to support its military structure.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both my guests, and sorry we are out of town, the co-founder of Free Palestinian Movement, Mr. Paul Leroudy out of San Francisco, California, and a senior fellow from the Hudson Institute, Mr. Richard White out of Washington. Thank you both for being with us, and thank you, viewers. Make sure you join us right here, same time, same place tomorrow on another debate. I'm Marcia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew here in Tehran. Thanks, and goodbye.